The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to Health Chat. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Lenoir Moudou. Ebola is a rare and deadly disease caused by infection with a strain of Ebola virus. The 2014 Ebola epidemic is the largest in history, affecting multiple countries in West Africa. The disease is a severe, often fatal illness with a death rate of up to 90%. Tonight we'll discuss more about Ebola, and joining us from New York is Dr. Peter Salama. Peter Salama is UNICEF's Global Emergency Coordinator for Ebola. Dr. Salama, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
We'll start our discussion in a moment with Dr. Salama, but first, here is an overview.
It began quietly in rural Guinea in the last days of 2013. The Ebola virus then raged throughout Guinea and Liberia and Sierra Leone. It made forays into Nigeria and Mali, killing doctors and caregivers and more than a third of those it infected. In its wake, Ebola left behind thousands of orphans. There has never been an Ebola epidemic like this one. Dr. Tom Kenyon heads the Center for Global Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. He says outbreaks in other parts of Africa have been much more easily contained.
The local public knows it's Ebola and takes measures to stop it. They stop touching sick people. They stop touching dead bodies and bury them safely. They wash their hands and with bleach solutions and don't touch one another. That will stop the outbreak.
But in West Africa, even doctors were caught off guard. Dr. Lisha Nolan is a disease detective at the CDC. She says wars left people fearful of outsiders and unwilling to work with them or to change practices that spread the disease.
There's lots of belief that it's a curse, that a witch came and caused these things to happen to people.
Unlike the remote areas of Central Africa, people in West Africa travel freely across borders and from rural areas to populated cities. Dr. Nolan says that makes it hard to contain the virus.
So movement is actually a big problem in this outbreak, and that people continue to move and continue to expose new populations to the infection.
In late March, Doctors Without Borders warned the Ebola epidemic was out of control. In August, the World Health Organization called it an international public health emergency. Aid finally started arriving. The U.S. military sent nearly 3,000 troops to build treatment centers in Liberia. Other countries and organizations, even individuals, also sent aid. By mid-December, WHO Chief Dr. Margaret Chan said there were signs of hope in some areas, as well as new outbreaks in others, especially Sierra Leone.
We must maintain our vigilance. Complacency would be our enemy. And in order to get it to zero, we have been successful in bending the curve a bit, but we need to continue to do more to get to zero.
Despite fast-tracking potential Ebola treatments and vaccines, early treatment and basic care remains the best hope for survival. For writer Carol Pearson, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Now back to you, Dr. Salama. Dr. Salama, first of all, in a nutshell, to a layman, what's the Ebola virus disease?
So the Ebola virus disease is a hemorrhagic fever virus, and that really just means that it's a virus that can cause bleeding. But beyond that, the most important thing about the Ebola virus is that it has indeed very high case fatality rates, as we call it in medical language, which means if you get the disease, there is quite a high risk of becoming severely ill and, of course, of dying. We know Ebola is also transmitted through certain behaviors and certain methods. So the highest risk behaviors are being involved in unsafe burials or caring for a sick one that has Ebola. So really, they're the two major drivers of transmission. But I think what's important to note about Ebola is it's not as contagious as many other viruses, and one has to have direct contact with body fluids in order to get the virus.
But as I mentioned in our introduction there, the death rate is very high.
That's correct, yes. It can be as high as you mentioned, 80 or 90%.
Paul, how do people generally get infected with the disease, with the virus?
So generally they get infected through one of three or four ways, either attending a funeral of someone that has passed away due to Ebola and touching the body. Sometimes in certain rituals, in certain cultures, people actually wash the body to prepare it during the funeral ceremonies or prior to that. The other major way of getting Ebola is to look after and care for someone, a relative perhaps, a loved one, who is sick with Ebola. And then there are other ways that perhaps cause less proportion of cases but are still important. Some of those include through healthcare workers, so actually within the health or hospital or clinic setting, Ebola can be transmitted from a patient to a healthcare worker. And we've seen a lot of healthcare workers in this recent epidemic dying of Ebola, several hundred, in fact. And finally, we know that traditional healers, historically in previous Ebola outbreaks and even in the current one, have also been a source of infection.
Yeah, Dr. Salama, you understand you recently returned from the West Africa and the affected countries of Sierra Leone, Guinea, and Liberia. First of all, how is the situation right now?
Well, I'd say that the situation is a very mixed picture, Douglas. So we have some positive news in the sense that Liberia, which previously had the highest number of cases, the epidemic there has really stabilized. The number of new infections, the rate of new infections have actually declined. So there's a lot of cautious optimism around the situation in Liberia. But having said that, we know on the other end of the spectrum, Sierra Leone is facing a major surge in new cases, particularly around the capital and what's called the western area, which is the area around the capital of Freetown, and in some other districts like Port Loko and Pono, which is in the northeast part of the country. So they're facing a very difficult situation. And in fact, for the first time in the last week or two, the number of cases in Sierra Leone has actually surpassed Liberia as the number one country for Ebola in West Africa. Somewhere in the middle, we have the situation in Guinea, which you remember saw the first case of Ebola back in December last year. So they're reaching almost their one-year anniversary in Guinea of Ebola. And there, the picture is a little mixed. They haven't had the same very high numbers of cases as Liberia and Sierra Leone have, but they have had a grumbling along of cases over the course of the last 12 months. And many of us working on the Ebola outbreak across the UN and other agencies are very concerned that, in fact, it may be Guinea that we're left with in a few months' time, because some of these epicenters or hotspots, as we call them, are in very difficult locations, remote locations, close to the borders with Sierra Leone, Mali, or Liberia, and relatively underserved and marginalized parts of the country.
We knew that the epicenter hotspot in Liberia was in Monrovia, the capital city. From your travels, are these hotspots now in rural areas as opposed to being in the city like Freetown and Monrovia?
Well, no, it's not as straightforward a pattern as that, Douglas. It's actually a very mixed picture. So even in Liberia, still the majority of cases are indeed coming from the district of Monserrado, the county of Monserrado, which does include Monrovia. And as I mentioned earlier, Sierra Leone, you still have a lot of cases in Freetown, in the capital. So it still is, to some extent, an urban outbreak. But we're seeing a new pattern now, which is many, many little hotspot areas, and these indeed can be in remote rural areas. So that's the challenge. On one hand, we have to contain the virus and the surge of new infections in big cities where there's high population density and where the virus can transmit easily simply because there's so many people living very close to each other. But at the same time, we have to be able to respond with rapid isolation and response teams that can fly out at short notice to stamp out the hotspots in remote rural areas. So it really is a challenge on both ends of the spectrum, Douglas.
It must be indeed challenging if the spread is not spread out and that needs more personnel. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And you know, one of the things we're working on at UNICEF and with WHO and WFP and other UN organizations is really to develop integrated teams that can be in all of the major hotspot districts, so we can continue to be very quick and responsive and flexible, so that as soon as there's new cases, we can be there on the ground.
And as we know, Dr. Salama, in some of these countries, health facilities are not up to standard, and in some rural areas they're not easily accessible. Now, briefly, for the sake of our listeners, what are the typical signs and symptoms of infection?
So the first sign or symptom of infection is usually fever, Douglas. So it starts with, as we call it, the dry period, which is usually fever, and that is an important initial sign and symptom. And then it progresses through what we call a gastrointestinal phase, which basically means that you get stomach symptoms. So you get symptoms such as diarrhea, vomiting, abdominal pains. And then during the course of this whole illness, people complain of body aches, of tiredness, of fatigue, until, of course, in the more rare cases, you do get some of these hemorrhagic or bleeding symptoms that people often associate with Ebola and other viral hemorrhagic fevers. So bleeding from the mouth, from the nose, from the eyes, from other parts of the body.
And is it true, Doctor, because we've been getting emails from our listeners, at that point, when you begin bleeding, it's almost a point of no return? At that point, can somebody be treated?
Certainly, some of those severe symptoms and signs are late stage, and they are associated with a worse outcome than the earlier symptoms. So it's quite true that it's much better to get people into care early. And some of the treatments are actually very simple, Douglas. You know, often the lay person or some of your listeners perhaps who are not yet have been exposed to Ebola in terms of living in a country with an outbreak, often we think that it really requires very high-tech treatments. And, of course, some of these are very useful, and we've heard about them in some of the cases around the world in recent months. But actually some very basic things can also help in terms of improving survival. And some of these are simple things such as oral rehydration salts. So very early on in that dry phase where the fever occurs, actually being treated early in that first few days and with very, very aggressive rehydration through something as simple as oral rehydration can actually help improve survival probably quite dramatically. And that's particularly important for children because what we've seen in this outbreak is that children under the age of 5 are in all likelihood having even higher death rates than the rest of the population. And part of the reason for that, we think, is because it's easy for children at that age to become dehydrated relatively quickly. So sometimes the basics are still important, Douglas, and oral rehydration, I think at the end of this outbreak, is going to be shown to be one of the most important ways we can actually improve survival with Ebola, as long as you get in early before those late-stage symptoms I discussed earlier.
I see. We're going to take a short break and we'll continue our discussion of Ebola just in a moment.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa. Every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
VOA News is always at the tip of your fingers.
All the news you want about Africa and the world, day and night, is available on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.
Make it your first source of news and information.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is Ebola. And joining us via phone from New York is Dr. Peter Salama. Dr. Peter Salama is UNICEF's Global Emergency Coordinator for Ebola. Dr. Salama, as we were talking before that short break, you were saying children may be at a higher risk of infection. And it gets tricky because they have to be attended to by their parents or guardians. And they have to be cautious on how they handle these patients.
Yeah, it is a very tricky situation with children, and they're facing a lot of complex issues as UNICEF dealing with children here, Douglas. The first point is that up to a quarter of cases so far have been in children during the course of the outbreak. Now, usually, of course, those children are indeed getting the virus from their families and from their homes. So that really implies that there are other people, often their parents, who are either sick or have died of Ebola. And so we're seeing a lot of specific issues related to children being infected and the very high mortality rates I talked about earlier. But then a lot of these secondary impacts, because their parents are dying, of course. So now we have a real issue in terms of the growing number of orphans due to the Ebola virus. And our estimation, although it's based still on preliminary data, is that there are around 10,000 children that have lost one or both parents due to Ebola in this outbreak. And so that's, of course, causing a real secondary impact of this disease, where we have to find ways to care and support for these children. The good thing, of course, as you know better than I do, in Africa, there are long traditions of extended families and communities looking after children in need. And certainly we're seeing some of those wonderful cultural practices kicking in into these countries. But there are other impacts that people also maybe don't think about too much, Douglas, in your listenership. And that's the fact that schools have closed across all of the three countries now for most of the year. So around 5 million children, of course, have not been able to go to school. As well as that, the basic health system and health services have really suffered. So we've seen plummeting rates of basic maternal and child health services, whether it's immunization rates in terms of vaccination, or whether it's in terms of women delivering babies with skilled care at clinics or hospitals. So all of this is having a big impact. And one child put it to me actually in Sierra Leone recently that he felt that his life had been turned upside down. And I think that's very true for a lot of children all across these three countries. Their lives really have been turned upside down. In fact, Douglas, I'll tell you one story from a recent trip that when I was visiting Freetown last week, I found that there was I went to visit a new Ebola treatment unit that was being constructed, because, as you know, there's a big surge of support going into Freetown because of the new cases. And I saw one boy working on digging a grave in a new Ebola treatment unit that was being constructed. And I asked him how old he was, and he said he was 14 years old. And I said, well, you know, doesn't he normally go to school? And he said, yes, he was in Form 3. And I asked him where he went to school. And he pointed straight behind me to a building, which I hadn't realized was actually a school. So they were actually building their new Ebola treatment unit and the graves associated with it on the soccer field of this boy's school. Mm-hmm. So just to show you how really life has been turned upside down for these children, Douglas.
So I got an email question from one of our listeners. Is can Ebola be transmitted from mother to child? Like if a pregnant mother had Ebola at an early stage and gave birth, would the child be at risk?
There is a potential to transmit Ebola, particularly through breast milk, Douglas. So it has been found that the virus can be transmitted through breast milk. So certainly that is one avenue of infection, and in fact, it's one of the rare occasions where we don't advise that women continue breastfeeding for the first few months.
Now, for those Dr. Salama who get to a facility or a hospital early enough, what's the treatment?
So, as I said earlier, I mean, most of the treatment thus far for Ebola has been it's what we call supportive care. No specific treatment have been widely available yet. And there is, as you know, no vaccine yet, although there are trials of both vaccines and therapeutic drugs going on at the moment. So it's really supportive care. And the most important thing that we can do is rehydrate. Rehydrate people early. At UNICEF, what we're doing at the moment is working with several partners. We're bringing care out to communities through something called community care centers. So rather than people always having to travel long distances, which often people are quite reluctant to do, especially if they know they have a high chance of dying either in the trip or away from home in a capital city or a regional center, they would much prefer to be cared for close to their families and communities. So we're setting up in Sierra Leone and in parts of Liberia and Guinea these community care centers where people can receive basic supportive care, where they can be isolated from their family members so they don't transmit the disease, and where nurses and healthcare workers can look after them, help rehydrate them, help bring down their fevers with antipyretics, help them with their nausea. It was often one of the big symptoms is nausea, just feeling sick, as well as antibiotics and treatments for malaria. So that's some of the basic supportive therapies that we can use. But the most important one of all of those is the rehydration aspect, Douglas, and that's the one that's most associated with survival.
Yeah, so to be sure, Dr. Salama, currently there's no licensed medicine or vaccine for Ebola virus disease. Is that correct?
That's quite correct, yes. But there are trials ongoing.
I see. Now, Dr. Salama, in your travels in the region, you mentioned there are some people at risk, especially children, as you say. Health workers is another category of people that are at high risk. How is the response from the neighboring countries there or the international organizations in sending in medical staff to help?
So there has been a massive international response. There's been a UN organization called UNMEER created especially to deal with Ebola and stop the outbreak. And under that umbrella, an enormous amount of work going on in the UN system through the World Health Organization, the World Food Program, UNICEF, and many others. As well as that, a huge mobilization of international NGOs and even bilateral governments through their militaries and through foreign medical teams. So it is a massive response, Douglas. I've not personally seen many as large as this in terms of a response from the international community, and an enormous amount of money is being spent on stopping the outbreak. Having said that, it is a complex situation, and it's not everyone that wants to travel from their home country to a country that has an Ebola outbreak, especially to work in clinical care where we know that even with the best personal protective equipment that UNICEF and WHO and others are supplying to these countries, there are still risks. And we've seen, of course, medical workers, both national, especially national, actually, and a few internationals contract the disease. So we really have to tip our hats and take them off, in fact, to the medical and health workers, particularly the nationals, but also the ones coming in from all around the world to assist the Douglas. They played a critical role, and they'll continue to play a critical role. But I would also say, really, at the heart of this outbreak are communities. And it's not just about treatment. And one of the things that I really want to underscore is that when you've got thousands of cases of Ebola like this, you can't just treat your way out of the outbreak. You actually have to prevent. And you have to prevent by really engaging communities. So communities are really the key to all of this, Douglas. And the biggest lesson learned from Liberia is that communities have stood up and said, enough suffering. We have to change some of these practices and behaviors, or at least adapt them, because many of them are age-old traditions, to keep our community safe. And really, that's the core of this. Communities will be the front line for all of this.
I see. Dr. Salama, there have been cases of Ebola at a smaller scale in places like DR Congo, Uganda at some point, I think even Sudan in the past. But it never reached this scale. What makes it the West African case so unique?
You know, it's quite true. We've had many Ebola outbreaks since the late 1970s in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as you mentioned, in Gabon, in Uganda, and other countries. I mean, what makes this very unique is that we weren't able to stop it early, so it grew and grew and grew to a level where it became very difficult to contain. And where it broke out of remote rural areas, where it often starts near forest regions, and it broke into urban centers, into places with very high population density. And once it got into those places with high population density, it became a much harder battle to defeat Ebola. And that's really the unusual part of this. It's the time it's gone on for, the number of cases, the fact that it's in major urban centers, that's really transformed this. And probably what's underlying this, of course, is the fact that now more and more we have population pressures and people also living much more closely to forest regions where we know that some of the virus remains in animals.
Dr. Salama, during the travels and from what you know, is there some improvement? Are we, will the disease be contained, or some people are now whispering that there may be an epidemic? What's your general assessment?
Well, my general assessment is the worst case doomsday scenarios that we were hearing about a few months ago have largely been avoided, primarily through governments and communities standing up and saying we have to stop this, as well as with support from the international community. So that's been an extremely important point, that we haven't seen those projections come true of more than 1 million cases that you'll remember some people were talking about in September and October. Having said that, it's still the largest outbreak in history, and we still have a long, long way to go before we defeat it. So it's a mixed picture. We're about halfway there, Douglas. So I think we can do the job. It's going to take months and months of very hard work to root out every last case, every last contact of those cases, and really defeat the virus to protect communities in the future, and then to rebuild some of these systems, which I think is a critical point, so that this doesn't happen again.
How far have we gone in as far as looking for a trial drug or a vaccine? An update?
So there are many promising therapeutic drugs and also a couple of promising vaccine candidates, Douglas, but they still have to go through all of the phases of their trials, especially for the vaccines. And so that's being planned now and for the first half of next year. I don't think that we're going to have a vaccine in time to be able to really determine the outcome of this current outbreak. But, of course, for the future, that'll be extremely important, and we should continue to really push the companies and the partnerships working on this to deliver.
And lastly, Dr. Salama, is it true that if somebody has had Ebola and gotten cured and survived it, he has now immunity, can never get it again? Is that correct?
Well, you know, it's hard to be categorical, Douglas, because this is a virus that hasn't been extremely well studied. But certainly it does appear that people are immune, at least partially, for a prolonged period of time. I'll not go on the record saying they could never get it again, but certainly, like with most viruses, infection does confer a high level of immunity.
That's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. I'd like to thank Dr. Peter Salama. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you so much, Douglas.
Thank you. Dr. Peter Salama, as I said, is the UNICEF Global Emergency Coordinator for Ebola, and we've been very happy to have him on the show. Thank you. For more on Ebola, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, in Washington, and tonight, let's leave you with the godfather of Sierra Leone's contemporary music industry, Jimmy Yani Bangura, popularly known as Jimmy B, who has joined the fight against the deadly Ebola disease in Sierra Leone through the launch of a new song, the Ebola Song.
They say prevention is better than cure. To save yourself, save yourself. Save yourself, save yourself.
Tenya mambe pia oloni, kebaye manyama evie. Nyambo de sepunyo, oya.
Say prevention is better than cure. So help yourself. No eat bushmeat. Use soap all the time for as you earn. If you fumble, your loved one or anybody where you know, don't die. Call the authorities them for letting can help take care of your body. Because diamond body self can transmit Ebola.